The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
For the moment, we're going to return to the issue of tariffs. Donald Trump talking today about the need to take historic action, but he is open to phone calls from different countries when it comes to how those tariffs are going to be implemented. So there's still no clarity as to how exactly all of this is going to roll out tomorrow, but something is going to happen. Liberation Day, as he is calling it. With me to discuss is Yanis Varoufakis. Yanis is, of course, an economist. He's the former Greek finance minister. And Yanis, I suppose I'm wondering, first of all, if you could understand the rationale behind tariffs from a Trump point of view.
Yes, I can. Well, let's not forget that there hasn't been any major power in the history of capitalism that didn't impose tariffs, at least during the early phases of its rise to the top. The United States manufacturing miracle was performed under tariffs, and then it was only after free trade became to the advantage of the United States, when the United States was becoming a surplus country, that they were steadily removed. But in the case of Trump, we run a very serious danger, you know, because he looks so inarticulate and he's such a poor excuse for human nature that it's really very easy to dismiss what he does as the workings of a madman. But if you look at his Treasury Secretary, Bessent, who is a very well-respected and rational player in the field, if you look at Steven Miren, the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers, their own explanations of tariffs, whether you agree with them or not, doesn't really matter, is a very coherent explanation.
And what is that explanation?
The Trump administration is founding everything that they are doing on a major, how shall I put it, insecurity. The insecurity that they have, and it's a rational one, is that the United States has shrunk in terms of its manufacturing capacity. China is already twice the size, manufacturing-wise, of the United States. And yet, the exorbitant privilege of the dollar, the hegemonic power of American finance, is supersized. Their fear is that if you have such a great asymmetry between the volume of your financial power and the volume of your manufacturing ability, at some point, there may be a major sell-off of the dollar. And that would bring about a complete catastrophe, not only for the United States, but for a large part of the world. And they want to effectively inflict a major shock upon the rest of us. In the same way that Richard Nixon did, by the way, in 1971, there's nothing new about that. Remember the Nixon shock, which completely and utterly destroyed, disintegrated the world economy in the 1970s. And it established the new hegemony of the United States based on its deficits. They want to do something similar, but succinctly, epigrammatically. They want simultaneously to devalue the dollar by around 25 to 30% and make sure that those who sell dollars for the dollar to be devalued, like the Japanese, the Chinese, the Germans, and so on, they do not buy another currency that would undermine the reserve currency status of the dollar. This is a very difficult task. It sounds like a contradictory twofold aim, but they have a plan for how to do this. I'm not saying that it's going to work or that it's going to be good for the world or even good for the majority of Americans, but it is foolish to dismiss them as a bunch of idiots.
Could it work? In the right circumstances, could it work? And could you see an America emerge, a hegemonic America emerge in the world stage in 5, 10, 15 years' time in much the same way we saw it emerge in the 1980s after the Nixon shock?
Yes, it is possible. I'm not saying that it's likely. Mm. Impossible to attach probabilities to the event, but it is possible. What they will need to do to succeed in doing it, and this is part of their blueprint, they need to, this is the plan. The plan is to slap, as they will do tomorrow, they call it Liberation Day, Trumpian exuberance. They impose tariffs on everyone, and then they invite each of us, the Irish, the French, the Chinese, the Germans, the Japanese, to go into one-on-one negotiations, because in disunity lies weakness, right? Mm. and then ask different things from different people. So from the Japanese who have something like $1.2 trillion in savings, they will ask them to sell those dollars and to purchase, for instance, 30-year-long U.S. Treasury bills. That would go a long way in the direction of what they want. With other countries like China, where they don't expect this kind of acquiescence, maybe they're quite happy to let the tariffs stand and simply receive the income from the tariffs that doesn't even have to go through Congress, unlike any increases in taxes. And the Chinese might be happy to live with that. So it is possible. But allow me to say what I think is going to be the comeuppance for Donald Trump. His worst nightmare should be, if he's smart enough, success. Because if he succeeds in this project of rebalancing trade, of shrinking the American trade deficit, of bringing more jobs, more manufacturing jobs, as he has promised to his MAGA working class base that elected him, then he is going to have some very irate, very annoyed with him financiers and realtors. Because let's face it, the financial sector in the United States and the real estate sector has been doing remarkably well for the last 30 years as a result of the American trade deficit. Because the American trade deficit is the reason why German capitalists make a wad of dollars, Japanese capitalists, Chinese capitalists. And what do they do with these dollars? They bring them back to Wall Street. And what do they do with the money? They buy real estate. They buy shares. They buy U.S. treasuries. And this is what makes the financiers and the realtors such a powerful social class in the United States over the last 30 years. If he succeeds in reducing the trade deficit of the United States, this tsunami of capital that is flooding Wall Street, has been doing it now for 30, 40 years, this is going to start drying up. So he will have to choose, the great Donald, he will have to choose between betraying the working class or betraying his realtor and financier friends. Guess whom I think he's going to betray?
History would suggest he's not going to betray those financiers, but we'd have to wait and see. How should Europe respond?
Well, Europe needs to blow up its own business model, because this is what the United States is doing under Trump. And I believe that even if Trump goes and the Democrat takes over, it won't change. This is a sea change. It's not coming back. And I think that Europe has to understand that building the whole of the Eurozone on the German industrial model, which is predicated on, as Ireland is as well, I have to add, on net exports, this goes. Because, you know, when you have built your economic model on net exporting to the United States, and you have a Trump who is prepared to take you to the cleaners with tariffs, with this, that, and the other, with currency devaluation, you don't have a leg to stand on. You cannot win a tariff war when you have a large trade surplus. You will run out of things to tariff well before he does. So how do we do that in Europe? If we don't want to reduce output, if we want to actually increase output, we're going to have to increase massively our consumption of our own stuff, which means that we should stop this idiocy of the fiscal compacts and the debt breaks and the fact that we don't have an investment policy in Europe, a pan-European investment policy. We don't have something which is equivalent of either the IRA that Biden introduced or the military-industrial complex, for that matter. And by the way, don't tell me about the European military-industrial complex. That's a joke. We don't have one, and we can't have one, to the extent that we don't have a solitary state behind it. We need to fully recalibrate the economy of the Eurozone. Particularly, we need a second pillar. We only have one pillar at the moment. It's the European Central Bank that provides price stability. But we don't have a growth pillar.
And what about from an Irish point of view, where you've got an economy that, much like the situation you describe in Europe, that is based on a surplus and an export economy rather than a manufacturing economy. What is the future? Is it a completely new economic model? Or is it, as some people are suggesting, you just find new markets for all those pharmaceutical products that you're selling?
Well, you will definitely try to find new markets, but with China developing its own very competitive products, the United States gunning at you with tariffs, the only solution is to change your own business model. There's no alternative to that. We are not going to be able to continue to live in a world with constantly increasing macroeconomic imbalances.
Yanis Varoufakis, the economist, the former finance minister of Greece, and the leader of MIRA 25. Yanis, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Stuart McNamara is with us as well, the director of Port Magee Whiskey and chair of the Irish Craft and Artisans Distilleries Association. Stuart, how worried are you about your own industry tomorrow?
Hi, Kieran. Thanks for inviting me on. Look, one of my favourite movies is The Bridge of Spies, where Abel is asked by Tom Hanks's lawyer, you know, Tom Hanks says, you don't look worried. And he says, would it help, you know? So I think really it's time for calm heads here. I've listened to your programme this afternoon and I'm particularly impressed with Danny McCoy from IBEC and Yanis as well. You know, it's the important thing is not to panic and not to react. In terms of the Irish whiskey sector, there's two very distinct business models, really, between the big guys, you know, that Danny's IBEC would represent. That's the Pernod Ricards, Jameson, Tullamore, Teelings, all of the big whiskey companies, and the small and craft companies who are exporting to the US, such as ourselves and others. So for the big companies, you know, we exported last year globally Irish whiskey about 1 billion. We hit 1 billion. And Irish whiskey exports internationally have been growing exponentially over the last 10 years with this Irish whiskey renaissance. America accounts for about 400 million of those exports, of that billion. So if the tariffs come in, now I heard, I think it was Danny earlier mentioned, you know, it's not coherent, you know, to talk about tariffs of 200%. Mm. It's just incredible stuff. Now, if a tariff comes in at 200%, you know, that really closes down, effectively closes down the American export market for everybody, big guys and small guys. If the tariff can be brought down or negotiated down by the EU to something like 20-25%, you know, we'll manage, we'll get through it, and we'll find ways of absorbing the costs. For the bigger companies, it'll be tougher because they're selling more entry-level whiskies. Like 90% of those exports are the big guys, you know, and the majority of those are, say, Jameson, you know, which is very good, but entry-level whiskey with lower margins. The smaller craft companies such as ourselves, you know, we might get a container or maybe two containers of whiskey over to the States every year, you know, and it's a tough market. You know, it's very expensive for a small company to compete with the bigger guys and to market yourself, and you need boots on the ground, you know?
Yeah.
So really, you know, you're working very, very hard for the first 4 or 5 years to try and get a niche for yourself, you know, with your story and with your brand. So for us, we're kind of premium, super premium whiskeys with higher margins and lower volumes. And as well as that, we tend to go not for the kind of the supermarket sales that Jameson and Tullamore and those would be going for. We tend to go for the kind of the craft shops and the whiskey aficionados. And the whiskey aficionado there doesn't really think in terms of Irish whiskey, you know, or Scotch. They think in terms of brands. And they like a brand, they'll adopt a brand because of its story and its flavor and the provenance of the whiskey. And they will be loyal to a brand. So for the likes of us, you know, we have one of the advantages of being a small company as well is that you're agile, you know, and we looked at what happened during the last time tariffs were applied on British whiskey, Scotch whiskey. And thanks to the Irish Embassy mainly over in Washington, who did a superb job, Irish whiskey escaped the tariffs during the last Trump regime by the skin of our teeth. But we were talking then, I think it was 20-25% tariff, and Scotch whiskey got clobbered for those couple of years until it was adjusted again. So, you know, what we saw, like, and plenty of other small brands saw this coming. And once the election results were announced in December or January, a lot of small brands decided, okay, let's scale down our American operation. You know, there's no point throwing good money after bad.
I was going to ask that, Stuart. I mean, there's people talking about the need to find alternative markets. Now, it's easy to say that, harder to do it. Is that something you guys are conscious of?
But never have all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And again, it's much easier for a small brand. You know, Europe is a dream market for us, for all of us, you know, because there are no barriers to trade.
Yeah.
You know, it's as easy to sell a case or a pallet or a container of whiskey in Germany or in Italy as it is in Dublin, you know. So Brexit had an effect on us all. You know, it's just made it far more complex. And a lot of companies have actually ceased exporting, to the UK, just because of the complicated nature of customs and the paperwork and the administration. You know, so Europe is the obvious choice. Another opportunity that's opened up out of crisis is Canada. And this, I'll come on to another point on this again about not alienating the customers if there is a response. You know, in Canada, because of the other factors that were going on about Canada becoming the 51st state, there was an immediate response by the Canadian populace and the Canadian customer base. And in Canada, you have a state agency that sells all alcohol. You can only buy alcohol from a state-owned shop. They immediately removed all American wines and spirits and beers from their shelves overnight.
Yeah,
as an immediate response, and the customer base that America has had for its products in Canada has evaporated overnight. They've actually turned against them. So it's inevitable. You know, I heard Kieran talking earlier about the green jersey and the blue jersey, and Danny from Ibec talking about the green jersey and the blue jersey. He's absolutely right. But the only thing, it's going to happen whatever we think, you know, but there is good confidence in the industry with the Irish leadership, especially at the embassy over in Washington. Within the government, there's a very good understanding, especially with the current Minister for Agriculture, of the industry. And there's also a very good understanding across all parties of the Irish MEPs and Commissioner over in Europe. So, like, we're in good hands, but there are bigger dogs in the fight than us. You know, if you look at it, as I said, you know, our exports to the States are 400 million, but the total EU exports of kind of alcoholic beverages last year, I think, were about 13 billion, you know, and most of that is Spanish, Italian wines, French cognac, French wines, obviously. And even Yanis would be delighted to hear 8% of the wines imported to America are Greek wines, actually, which came as a surprise to me when I looked it up a while back. So, you know, we can jump up and down, as you said, get worried about it. It's not going to help because, you know, 400 million in Irish whiskey exports, 13 billion in the EU, you know. The big people are going to decide what's going to happen here.
Right.
You know,
we'll have to wait. Go on.
The last thing I'll just say before is that whatever measures they take, you know, and if counter tariffs or countermeasures are being deployed, is, you know, identify the target, you know, and be sure that the target is not the EU or the US customer, because we will all be back.
Yeah,
you know, and it will pick up where it left off. Yeah.
It's a fair point. Well made, Stuart. Thanks a million. Stuart McNamara is the director of Port Magee Whiskey. He's chair of the Irish Craft and Artisan Distilleries Association.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.